And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Nerys.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation. With Sean Engle. And Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Listen to the Prophets, your bi-weekly show where two remarkable podcasters and myself jump into the information superhighway to talk about the redheaded stepchild of the Star Trek universe, Deep Space Nine. And this time out on the show, we're breaking into the double digits. Hooray, as this is our 10th episode.
Yay!
Who would have thought we would have made it this far? And now only 600, or one, not 600.
We're not doing every single episode of Star Trek, dude.
And we're going to read every comic and every book ever written.
Yeah, so at which point you'll be sat here talking to yourself.
Pretty much. Only 166 more to cover, so that's not too bad. That's only like 6.5 more years worth of podcasting, so that's not...
What, if you sit down and do it continuously?
Well, no, well, if you'd like, sure.
But aren't we supposed to be, like, enjoying this and not, like, counting off the days till it's over?
Yes.
I thoroughly enjoy it. I really enjoy my bi-weekly chats with you two.
Mm-hmm. It's actually a heck of a...
As do I. Apparently Sean has a problem with it, then.
Well...
Well, we can always replace Sean. They got rid of Jad Zia, didn't they?
I'm going to bring back to Billy right now to replace him.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill, do you want to start editing these?
Sure. Oh, wait.
If his what am I doing here? Avengers Spotlight is any indication, when it goes more than 6 years.
Have you not told Bill that this isn't a back to the bins?
I just kind of keep Dr. Bill off to the side.
And just, he's just always sat at your side, just in case you ever need
him. He's like always in my Skype chat window, and then I just add him in when we don't have enough people.
Right now, I'm not even sure if I'm really here. I could be a LMD for all I know.
I know I'm not really here.
Anyhow, today we're going to be covering another episode from the first season of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. This one is, for me personally, an episode which redeems the characters of the Ferengi by expanding them above the simple, conniving Ross Perot wannabes. And it also doesn't hurt that the inconceivable talent of Wallace Shawn is also on display as well.
My line, you son of a...
You're welcome. Yes, this time out we're talking about the episode The Negus. And of course, when I say we, I mean myself, Sean Engle, and three of my In for the Profit cohorts, Mr. Paul Spataro, Mr. Andrew Leyland, and Mr. Bill Robinson. Or Dr. Bill Robinson. There you go.
We're in it for the money.
You didn't go to podcasting medical school for 4 years for nothing.
Never go against a Ferengi when business is on the line. That was a terrible Wallace Shawn. It's too early.
That's okay. So, do we have anything star something to talk about today?
Yeah, didn't a new trailer drop yesterday as we record this for Star something, Trek, Battlestar Trek Wars 1999 or something like that?
Exactly.
Starscape, right?
Yes.
Starscape DS1.
Since only one of the people who was on the call today was able to make it to the 5-minute freak that discussed the new Force Unleashed trailer, would anyone here like to give a little discussion of what they thought about it?
It was all right, wasn't it? Yeah. There's not really enough in it to get bent out of shape about, to be honest with you. I love the X-Wing fighters skimming over the water. I loved seeing the Millennium Falcon. I like that they fixed the thing on the top that Lando knocked off at the end of Return of the Jedi. It's, you know, it was okay.
I find it hard to believe they couldn't get a matching, another round one. I wonder if there'll be a story or if they'll just bypass it completely.
Well, you know, you think about it, it's supposed to be set, what, 20, 25 years into the future after Return of the Jedi, if that's what I'm thinking, something like that. I mean, you don't drive your car 25 years after you've, you know, had it around. You know, maybe this is an entirely new Millennium Falcon. Maybe he upgraded for the, you know, the newer model and it's got a newer, you know, because the Millennium Falcon did tend to look a little different than the original one. It looked a little sleeker, a little thinner, but, you know,
I don't know. I'm sure Paul has socks older than us.
So. See, I think that's a very good point. I'm really hoping they're not just going to force them all to wear the same clothes that they wore in the original trilogy as well. I don't wear the same stuff I wore 25 years ago. I don't fit in it.
No comment. I,
I don't fit in it, but I still do.
Yeah, it's just, I don't see what there is to get bent out of shape about it. It doesn't tell you what the story is. It doesn't really give you anything to chew on other than a few cool images. But if the point of it was to give you a couple of cool images, then job done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't listen to 5 Minute Freak yet. Sorry to everybody who made the effort to record it. I will listen to it. But I know there was like a big deal being made over the soccer ball droid. And it's like, really?
Yeah. You know,
I think somebody put on Facebook, you know, that's probably just an establishing shot and that's all you're going to see in the entire movie.
Yeah, for all we know, it's got this exactly the same purpose to the story as the red R2 unit that blows up in Tatooine.
Either that or the little mouse droid that Chewbacca, you know, encountered on the Death Star. It's a cute little thing that, you know, you're going to go, oh, ha, 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 that's kind of funny. And you're going to see it for like 5 seconds and it's going to be gone. You know,
especially this early in the run, they're not going to show you anything significant. They wouldn't show you anything as cool as Jar Jar Binks at this early level.
Oh, we can only hope that Jar Jar plays a magnificent, you know, redemptive role in the new Star Wars trilogy. That would
Jar Jar's dead, dude.
Oh, he is?
George Lucas said he was on Alderaan when it blew up. I mean, I know the EU's not canon anymore, but if George Lucas said that, I think we should honor his word.
Yeah, well, if that's the case, I'm who am I to go against the great, you know, mind of George Lucas? So.
But did you see on Robot Chicken when Jar Jar comes out and he's Darth Vader and Jar Jar's coming out, he's like, Annie, what are you doing, Annie? Eventually, Darth Vader force chokes him to death, and then he has like the ghost Jar Jar following him around.
Oh yes, I remember that. That was some good stuff.
Misa is a Ferengi now.
That, I guess that's as good a segue as any.
I think that really was a 5 minute freak.
No, I only had one theory that I posted on Facebook. That the three people you see in the trailer, I guess, are the new three leads for the movie. And
oh, is that who they were? Because I've stayed away from everything. I didn't have a clue any of
that. I didn't know that either until I saw it posted when I was reading a review of it saying that these are the three leads. And then I thought about that. If you look at how they portrayed each one is an Imperial, and it looks like he's waking up somewhere. And I don't know if he's going to be a villain, you know, if he's going to be... I proposed that they were going to mirror the three leads or our three main characters from the first movie, that the one trooper would mirror Han and that maybe he's a former Imperial. The woman that's on Tatooine is going to be Luke's analog. And then the guy that's flying the X-Wing would be the Leia analog. Perhaps that was the only thing. I mean, there's not much you can get out of that trailer because
there's
not much
there,
to it.
There?
Yeah.
No. The only thing I got from it was that stormtrooper guy at the beginning. I was like, is he in Attack the Block?
Yes, he was. Yes.
All right. Yes. Well, Attack the Block's brilliant. If you've not seen it, go and check it out. It's a great film.
No, I fully agree. That was a fun movie, and yeah, that was the same character from that. Overall, yeah, I thought it was an interesting teaser. I mean, it got me excited for the new movie. The shot of the Falcon with the John Williams music coming in behind it was just it got me excited to see what this movie is. And I'm a person who's enjoyed the works of J.J. Abrams. I mean, yes, granted, Star Trek is not really Star Trek, but Star Trek was an entertaining movie. if you take it as an entertaining movie, J.J. Abrams makes entertaining movies. So I think this could be, you know, a good Star Wars movie. You know, I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Person of Interest is a great show.
Oh, definitely.
I like Alias.
Involved with Alias, and that was convoluted but fun.
Wasn't Person of Interest? I thought that was the Nolans. I thought that was Christopher Nolan's brother.
Nolan's executive producer and produce it and write it, but it's J.J. Abrams' bad robot company that makes it, funds it, whatever you want to call it. So he has something to do with it.
He was also behind a little bit that show with that was on the Fox network, The Almost Human, which I thought was a good show as well.
Oh, yeah. Carl Urban.
Yeah, the one with Carl Urban in it. So that was a pretty intelligent show that unfortunately got, you know, lost because people just didn't glom onto it. But I thought, you know, he does some good stuff. So I think this could be – it bodes well. I enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what's coming up next.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as much as you can enjoy 88 seconds of random clips.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna throw in there, because I'm slightly tired of apologizing for J.J. Abrams at every turn. You know, the last Star Trek movie came out, and I understand, you know, I'm among the minority, because except for the con turn on it, I enjoyed the movie. But everybody said then, hey, now we know that J.J. Abrams could direct a good Star Wars movie. And now, you know, he's directing a Star Wars movie, and people are like, well, I don't know, it's J.J. Abrams. You know, enough already. People have got to stop complaining about stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of it will come from they only know J.J. Abrams from the two Star Trek movies. A lot of his television stuff was great. Cloverfield was a great movie. Mm-hmm. What was the other one? The Super 8? That was
Super
8
was a great you know, that was basically a love letter to everything Spielberg from the 80s, and I thought it was really an enjoyable movie. So, yeah. People who bash on J.J. Abrams and lumping in with, you know, like the Michael Bays or these sort of who's the guy who directed X-Men 3 at The Last Stand?
Brett Ratner.
You know, these sort of people who are considered hacks. You know, well, not hacks, but, you know.
Well, that's what they're considered. I'm not saying they are hacks. I'm saying that's what they're considered.
Yeah, he's not. He's a talented director, and I think he's got an interesting visual style. And I'm also sick of, you know, hearing, oh, I saw lens flares in there. Oh, that's like the cheapest joke you can pull on him. You know, it's an interesting visual style, and I'm like I said, I'm looking forward to the movie.
Well, hey, yeah. Paul, you said con? Wait. Hold on. All right, I've got volume 2 of my con synopsis done.
This is not Bins.
Yeah, no. Moving swiftly. Oh. On.
We're gonna move into the synopsis.
Hold on, I gotta pick this up and move it. Okay.
Maybe
we should get Ben to help you, or is that hammer on top of it? Insider jokes, loving it.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and start off with our synopsis of the Negus. Let's go ahead and do this.
An empire forged by treachery and deceit.
My advice is to lock up the silverware.
I'm already on it.
It's about to unveil its master plan.
Our word can be our bond
until we decide to break it.
First, they will choose a new leader.
Quark!
Then they'll take over the galaxy.
When in doubt, be ruthless.
I'll touch it.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
The Negus was the 11th episode of Season 1 of Deep Space Nine, and it aired on or about the 21st of March, 1993. It was written and directed by David Livingston and had a teleplay by Ira Stephen Baer, and the regular cast was accompanied by Max Grodinchek as Rom, Aaron Eisenberg as Nog, Tiny Ron as Merdu, Laura Wagner as Crack, Verlu Wagner as Crax, and Wallace Shawn as Grand Negusett. And as usual, the synopsis comes once again from the Star Trek Deep Space Nine Companion, written by Terry J. Erdman and Paula M. Block. When Grand Negusett, the elderly leader of the Ferengi business empire, comes to Deep Space Nine with his son Crax and his Hyrupian servant Mardu, Quark is more worried than honored by the visit. He fears that Sek, a godfather-like figure, might just be there to make an offer that he can't refuse, the purchase of Quark's bar for a pittance of its real value. As it turns out, Sek does want the bar, but only temporarily for an important business conference concerning Ferengi interest in the Gamma Quadrant. Meanwhile, Commander Sisko has problems of his own. Chief O'Brien is warned about Quark's nephew Nog, seems to be a bad influence on Sisko's son Jake. Sisko resists the temptation to split up the boys, but can't help wondering if he's made the right decision. Nog's father, Rom, has no such qualms when Zek expresses his disapproval of the Ferengi boys attending the Federation school on the station. Stung, Rom orders Nog to stay away from the school. Quark is surprised when Zek asks him to sit in on the gathering of the powerful Ferengi businessmen. He's even more surprised when the Grand Negus announces his retirement and that his successor will be Quark. But Quark has barely begun to relish the power that comes with the title when he discovers another attribute of the job. Death threats from enterprising Ferengi who seek to enhance their own financial futures in the Gamma Quadrant. Quark goes to Zek for advice, but the former Negus dies in the middle of their conversation. Quark makes Rom its bodyguard, lapping in his brother's desired preference to take over the bar. Not long after that, Quark narrowly escapes an assassination attempt. Although there are numerous suspects, Odo focuses on Martu, who hasn't been seen since Zek's death. While Odo conducts his investigation, Sisko worries about Jake's frequent absences. Once again, Nog is to blame. When Jake misses dinner one night, Sisko follows Dak's advice to track the boy down. Much to his surprise, he finds Jake in an empty cargo bay, teaching Nog how to read. Proud of his son, Sisko steals away without disturbing the lesson. Another attempt is made on Quark's life, and the new Negus discovers that his foes are none other than Zek's son Krax and his own brother Rom. Just as the duo is about to eject Quark into space, Zek appears along with Odo and Merdu. The Negus's quote-unquote death was a charade, assisted by Merdu and staged to dex Krax's worthiness to be Zek's successor. Noting that Krax has failed miserably, Zek decides to remain Grand Negus for a while longer. Quark, however, is pressed with Rom's part in the treachery and rewards his brother by making him an assistant manager of policy and clientele at the bar.
What does that even mean?
Exactly. It's one of those fake titles that you give to people to make them feel good.
It's one of those fake titles that you give to people when your entire business is run on nepotism.
Mm-hmm.
It's also one of those fake titles you give to people when you want to make them happy that they were promoted but not actually give them more money.
that would be
the Ferengi.
Like so the producer.
So
yes, exactly. So go on, producer Sean.
Or doctor.
Exactly.
I loved this episode. I really did. I think we've finally gotten out of the realm of the sort of not quite written for Deep Space Nine episodes. I think we've gotten the characters down right. We've got some episodes coming up that really focus in on one specific character. It's not so much the ensemble, and I think they're getting the characters written really well. I think they've redeemed the Ferengi from what we saw of them in Star Trek The Next Generation, because they never just clicked in there. And a lot of people who just look at the Ferengi from Next Gen and think that's who the characters are really doing themselves a disservice, because Deep Space Nine so well fleshed out the characters of the Ferengi, especially in this episode, which introduced not only the Grand Negus and the idea of the acquisition of wealth, but this was the first episode also to bring in the entire idea of the rules of acquisition, which is going to be the founding idea for the Ferengi characters throughout the rest of this series. I love this.
Yeah, we're not going to get a lot of disagreement on this one, I don't think. I agree with you. I think I said last time, it's been 2 weeks, so, you know, my senior mind doesn't work that well. But I think I said last time that I kind of started to get the feeling that we're now in the point where the writers have seen the casting, have seen some of the filming that's been done, and they're starting to tailor their writing to what they've seen and working on the chemistry that they know exists between the characters, as opposed to we have a Bible that tells us who the characters are and we're just writing for them. And I think they've seen the potential of Quark, and they played with it last episode, which I did not think was a good one, but now I think they're starting to get it right, and I I gotta say, I have notes on this episode, and there is precious little that is in the slightest bit negative.
Yeah, I don't really don't have all that many notes at all. You know, that's one of those circumstances where when you have a good episode, it's hard to find notes other than, oh, that was really good. So,
well, you know what? First note, just to throw it right out there, I'm sorry to do this before everybody else can give their first impressions, but the first note, so far in this season, best Morn moment yet.
Poor Morn.
Oh, I love it, Morn. When he, the beginning when he's laughing, and then when he's at the door trying to get into the bar and they won't let him in.
Oh, I just think it's hilarious. Quirk shoo him away. because Morn is just, he's essentially, yes, Norm. He just wants to be there and sit at the bar and drink and be that sort of, you know, that character that you see in Cheers or whatever. And it's so great that he's getting not really an expanded role, but you're getting to see more of him than just flashes of him walking by. Yes, these were some great, great Morn bits in this.
What'd you think, Andy?
It was awful.
Really?
No, no, I'm joking with you. No, yeah. It's exactly like Sean said. It's a Ferengi story that sets the Ferengi up in a much better way of portrayal. That makes sense in English. Than they ever did on Next Generation. They are the ultimate capitalists. That's what their culture is. I particularly love the ending where Quark doesn't take this out on Rom. He's actually, no, I didn't think you had the stones to do that, man. I'm going to promote you. And Rom's like, oh, okay, maybe I should try and execute my brother on a regular basis. It was great for every single moment of it. I mean, there's a note in the companion that the original script was Quark was hosting a gathering of different races. And it was Ira Stephen Burr who wrote the screenplay who said, well, let's make them all Ferengi. That may be fun. So he inadvertently has created the Ferengi culture with this episode, because everything that would follow this builds on this show. This is the first mention of the rules of acquisition. Although we've had Quark give little homilies like that before, this is the first time they have specifically been referred to as that name. And every time the Negus will show up again as the series continues. Does he show up once a season from now on? Is he like Q?
I was going to say, I don't know if it's exactly once a season, but it's probably on average.
Yeah.
They do have at least an episode that deals with the Ferengi culture, whether it be the Negus showing up or Quark going to Ferenginar or whatever the Ferengi home planet is and dealing with his mother or whatever. So there's always little bits where they expand the Ferengi culture, which is great because, you know, we got so much in Deep Space Nine dealing with the Klingon culture and the expansion of that. You know, it's nice to see that they're also dealing with the Ferengi culture and Quark and his relatives and all of that. So this is a great episode.
Everything that comes from, everything that develops from the Ferengi culture, comes from this episode.
What do our guests think of this one?
I did a little research. I guess I'll wait on that. No, I like this. I was surprised. I had forgot that. I was almost confused at the end. I'm like, wait a minute, Quark's brother's trying to kill him? I don't remember that of his character. I remember his character just always being groveling, you know, yes, brother. Oh, and I was like, wait a minute, I don't remember this vicious Rom trying to kill him. And I was like, did I slip into a mirror universe or something? What's going on here? And then I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's right. I forgot. Okay, he's happy that he's more vicious now. All right, that's where this is going. But no, I like this. It does build on the Ferengi. Because they were terrible in Deep Space Nine. They were just a joke.
Of course, Dr. Bill meant to say the Next Generation. I'm so glad we added his knowledge to the show.
And I was curious as to who all the Ferengi were under the makeup. There was a few people I was surprised that were Ferengi, but we could talk about that later. But yeah, this was a good one for me to wet my beak into the Prophet show.
Yeah, I love the little subtle things that they do with Negus's makeup. If we have established that the Ferengi lobes are erogenous zones, which we have, I love that Negus's ears are much bigger and hairier and dangle down a lot more than everybody else's do.
Well, you know, when you get older, you know,
I thought that was really subtle.
A little bit.
Yeah. And they get away with it, because to anyone not paying attention, they're just ears.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I have a specific note about that on my thing. Not only the size, which is just great, because it just brings to mind Bad Grandpa, but but also just the hair coming out of them and all. The
big tufts of white Mugatu hair coming out of them.
You know, one of the things that I liked specifically about this episode, over the course of the past couple episodes, we've had these sort of introductory, you know, bits that have really gone nowhere. You've got, Bashir, you know, trying to flirt with some girl. You got the girl who was talking to Sisko about, you know, Quark sexually harassing her and all this, and those little pre-credit things never went anywhere. Finally, we get a little pre-credit thing that actually plays an important subplot in the show, with Jake having this relationship with Rom, and his father not knowing, you know, how to deal with it. You know, whether he should approve of it, whether Rom is a bad influence on him,
whether Nog is a bad influence on him.
And, you know, we finally come out to find out that Jake is, you know, a good and kind, you know, that Sisko's beliefs of his son hanging out with Rom being...
It's Nog. Nog, you foolish. Foolish man.
A bad influence on him, you know, were proven to be untrue when Jake was, in the end, found that he was going to go help Rom, but Nog, learning how to read. So I really enjoyed the fact that we got an opening scene that actually played into the episode.
Yeah, and I thought that the whole dynamic there really played well. A couple of levels of that. Not only the not trusting the kid who your son is hanging out with, which, you know, even when your kids are hanging out, we're all parents, all four of us, even when your kids are hanging out with people who you really ultimately decide are good kids, there is a little of that fear that they're being a bad influence on them early on, until you get to know the kids they're hanging out with, you know, better. Mm-hmm. So that really rang true. But there's also even the aspect of it that he had gotten the tickets to go see some sort of Bajoran festival or something, and that Jake was kind of like, do I have to go? You know, meanwhile, you know, Ben picked up the tickets thinking, oh, I'm doing something great. This is going to be a great Father Son Day. I'm treating him to something special. And the kid is still looking at it like, oh, God, I got to go with this with my father.
Yeah, but who wants to go to the gratitude festival? Come on.
Probably Kira.
Oh, yeah, she's probably all, oh, the gratitude. I'm so happy.
And if Kira wants to go, Andy wants to go.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
He wants to go to see the fire caverns.
No, he wants to go to see Kira.
He wants to see Kira's fire caverns. you know, that is one of the notes I had, because when they said fire caverns, I was like, wait a minute. I looked up. That's where the Pah Wraiths come from later on in the series.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because they've been banished to the fire caves. I'm assuming fire caves, fire caverns, same thing. So, and yeah, that whole Jake and Nog, the little "a Vulcan ate my homework" speech to teacher, or
yeah,
I guess
O'Brien, to Chief O'Brien.
Yeah, so you're telling, you know, the whole thing is that it's an essay on an ethics test, and he's getting Jake to lie for him, and then they say, well, why did the Vulcans take your homework? Because they don't have ethics. Nice.
It's a clever argument. I could see my daughter pulling something like that. You know, my daughter is one of these girls who does have the tendency to come up with excuses for getting her homework done or getting her work done. But you know, other than the Ferengi, and the, you know, I kind of like the obvious Godfather homage. And I figured you, Paul, would enjoy that as well, with The Godfather being like one of your favorite movies, where Quark's in there, you know, stroking his little alien cat-like thing.
That's my favorite part, that he's stroking that thing, like the way The Godfather was stroking the cat.
Mm-hmm. And then he also utters the line, "And now you call me Nagus." You know, it's just... supposedly, David Livingstone, when he got his copy of this, they didn't do the score that they have in the actual episode. They actually scored it with that sort of violin music that they have in that scene, that they actually scored it with the Godfather soundtrack for that scene. And he said, you know, when he finally got to see it on live TV, he didn't know that it wasn't scored that way. So he expected it to have the Godfather music behind it, but only his version of it actually had the Godfather music. So I thought that was rather amusing. But that
I did find that amusing, and I made a note on it. And my note, though, the surprise, remember what I said, there was precious few negative? My one negative comment, and it's such a minor negative nitpick, though, is I just thought if that scene had just been a tiny bit longer, they could have been a little more subtle with it instead of banging us over the head like they kind of did. You know, that was my only negative about it, was I just thought it was a little, maybe a tiny bit too over the top.
Well, I think that there's still, this is initial establishing, especially with what we've seen with the Ferengi prior to this, that we don't get ridiculousness, that we do get a sort of respect with the Ferengi culture or with the Ferengis on this episode, that it being slightly over the top isn't too much to argue about, because coming from the way they're portrayed in Next Generation to how they were portrayed in Deep Space Nine is such a vast difference that the opportunity for them to be just a little over the top really doesn't diminish them any much in this episode for me.
I agree, and take it for what it's worth, that that's only like a slight nitpick negative, because I still laughed during the scene. It wasn't like it failed and I was, you know, rolling my eyes. I was laughing when I saw it.
Yeah. Did you have any thoughts on the Godfather homage, Andy?
The minute that happened, I thought of Paul.
Because I've watched it. Do you think of me because you know I love The Godfather, or do you think of me because you think that's who I am?
No, that's who you are. No, because I know you love The Godfather. I've seen the first one twice and the other two once. So I'm watching it going, is this a shot-for-shot remake of The Godfather? And then I looked it up, and of course it is. And that's, like I said, my next thought was, Paul's going to love that. Apparently, there's a director's cut version of this with the music from The Godfather underscoring that scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they couldn't get the rights to do that properly.
I think I mentioned that Livingston said that he had a copy of that, or he had a copy of that that had the music behind it, and he thought it was great. And he was kind of disappointed when he found out that they had to score it with the regular Star Trek music behind it. But yeah,
Armin Shimerman does a fine enough Brando impression that we get the point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, and I love the little subtle things that you'll see, you know, Shimerman do with his ears. You know, he'll just run his finger down the bottom of his lobe. It's just kind of like, you know, I guess it'd be akin to someone grabbing their crotch, basically. So that's kind of amusing.
Yeah, that's disturbing.
Well, there you go. My job is complete then.
Andy, what did you think of the Vulcans ate my homework speech that Nog gave to O'Brien?
Oh, I liked all of that stuff, because it felt very much like a response to when they did the Next Gen episode where Wesley had to grass his friends up. And apparently that did lead to almost a knockdown, drag-out fight in the writer's room where Ronald Moore was no, he'd back his friends. And Michael Piller was no, his first duty is to the truth. And you get here that they kind of do a similar thing where Jake lies for his friend, which I thought was quite nice. I like the non-Jake relationship.
And you can kind of see it
pains him. Yes, it does, but he does it because he's backing his friend up, which, you know, that's what friendship is. And as we go through the series, the Jake-Nog relationship will be another one of those wonderful little background textures that you don't get on the other shows, that you could only do that on this one.
Yeah,
and the dialogue was brilliant as well. There's some wonderful lines in this. My favourite being, please feel free to use my own brother's quarters for as long as you're with us.
Yeah, I really think that they've, you know, we mentioned in the episode where we finally got to see Garak that they were doing a good job expanding the secondary characters. Finally, we're getting a decent expansion of the secondary characters with Nog, with Rom. You know, they actually mentioned that Nog is Rom's brother, not just his associate.
Again, you meant to say he is Quark's brother. Maybe Paul and Andy should actually try and recruit Dr. Bill to replace Sean.
So the cast is starting to expand outside of the normal, command crew. So the episodes are finally getting, they're coming to the point where I'm actually starting to think that the show is going to be really good. And this is just one of the prime examples of it.
In the past episodes when they've shown Rom, I don't think they've shown him the way he's kind of going to be the rest of the series. And this episode, I think they do. I think they you know, for a guy who probably only had maybe 5 minutes of screen time, 4 minutes of screen time in the whole episode, they kind of make him into a layered character. The scene where Quark punishes him for not following the rules of acquisition, and then he just passes the punishment right on to Nog. I love that. Mm-hmm. And there's also just the glee that he has when they have Quark in the airlock. It's just, I don't know, I just got such a huge kick out of him in this episode. I thought he was great.
Yeah, they finally fleshed out the character and kind of, you know, turned him in from just a basic Ferengi service member to an actual character, the actual brother of Quark. And, you know, we'll see his character develop even more throughout the show as well. I do want to mention this, and maybe this was just me. Supposedly, the Nagus's staff and the little headpiece on top of it was supposed to be sort of sculpted off the image of Armin Shimmerman and his Quark makeup. But I think if you shrink the ears a bit and take out the pointy teeth, he kind of looks like you a little bit, Paul.
I did pose for that.
Okay, I was gonna say, because I was taking a look at that, and I was looking, you know, if there was a caricature image of Paul, it would look exactly like that. Wow, so take no offense to that, or take a lot of offense to that. If you
why
like.
Why would I be offended by being told that I look like a Ferengi?
The Grand Sitaro.
I gotta go.
Put the lobes on him.
Oh, man, I don't even know how to respond.
You're welcome. So do we have anything else we want to talk about this, or do you want to...
I got a couple of little things on here. It's fairly subtle, but I like how... I think this is the first indication we had of Ben's love of baseball, that he's standing there with the glove and the ball, throwing it while he's killing time.
Mm-hmm. No, he's had the baseball on his desk since the beginning.
Yeah, is this the first time we actually saw him handling it, though?
Well, baseball was a big thing in the actual season, or in the actual pilot episode. I mean, baseball was the thing that he used to relate to
wormhole aliens. The time, that's right.
Yeah, it's the first time we've seen him throw it and catch it in his office. Mm-hmm. But when he's having moments of pensive thought, he will pick the ball up and just start playing with it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm gonna change the thought to it's not introducing his love of baseball, but it's continuing it and not letting it just lie there and be something that they've moved on from. They're making it a real part of his character.
Yeah.
But so, he puts it in his food bowl. What the heck was up with that? Like, no, don't put the ball in the bowl. Oh,
it's Cajun seasoning. There you go.
I just love. And I know we've kind of touched on it already, but I think they tried to hit a little bit on Ferengi culture in the past episodes, in particular in Move Along Home when he's, you know, he cheats in the game and all of that crap. But this one, you know, they just really to go back to baseball, they just hit it out of the park in this one. They hit on so many of the touchstones that they're going to continue to build on, as you guys were mentioning already, that I just can't underplay that aspect of this episode, because they managed to do it and they folded it into the episode that you don't feel like you're getting hit over the head with it, and they did, like I said, they did stuff that you're going to still be kind of working with in season 7, so it's just awesome. And I think part of that is just the casting of Wallace Shawn as the Nagus. Whoever saw Wallace Shawn and said we have to make him a Ferengi, while it may seem obvious to us right now, you know, having seen how perfect that was, I just got to say that's brilliant casting.
Oh yes, I mean, you know, Wallace Shawn, he steals the show, and for like the first, you know, for the first third of the show, he doesn't really speak at all. It's all,
you just hear that laughter.
Brilliant.
And the only thing, it's not a note on the episode at all. But just something I thought of afterwards was, I'm a little surprised when you talk about like building the world that they're in, how little we've seen so far this season of Gul Dukat. that he didn't show up this episode at all, and it just seems like, you know, he becomes so pivotal to where this series goes, and to be, we're 11 episodes in now, and what has he been on screen? Maybe 2 or 3 minutes in 11 episodes?
Well, he was pretty major in the first episode, in the pilot, but after that, I don't...
He was significant, but he didn't have much screen time.
No.
Well, this goes to they constantly had to fight with Rick Berman to get the show made serial. And Ira Stephen Burr's not in charge yet. He will only step up to being in charge of, and being the showrunner when Voyager comes along, and Berman's busy with that. And then when he's in charge, he's like, well, all right, let's make it proper serialized. So at the moment, any serialized ideas that they get through, they're kind of sneaking in through the back door.
Yeah, it is true. It doesn't really seem to get really serialized, and episodes build upon each other until... probably around season 3, definitely into season 4. So, yeah, a lot of these episodes could be played out of sequence and you really wouldn't lose anything, this especially in this first season.
Right. And my, you know, it's more just kind of a hindsight thing, knowing how significant he becomes and his, you know, just the whole aspect of the conflict with him becomes, having not seen this first season for at least, I would say at least 7 years. Since I've seen it, it's stark to me. Like I would have thought by now they would have developed him more, and I'm a little surprised they haven't. And it's not really a criticism at all. It's more or less just kind of an observation.
No. Yeah, it's coming to the end of it. You remember it being a lot more serialized than it was, especially when you come out of series 7, which is essentially one long big story.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was surprised. No Gold Dukat or this or the next one. Aw.
Yeah, no Gold Dukat, no Garrick, you know, unfortunately, you know, we've got the main cast, but yeah, the secondary characters are what made the show, you know, it differentiated this show from your other Star Trek Next Generation series. And
I think that's why it's holding up as well as it is, because it was one of the first shows to do that kind of serialized nature, and now everything does that. Mm-hmm. So it holds up much better now than maybe the next, certainly I think, than the Next Generation does. There are good episodes of Next Gen, don't get me wrong, but I don't think that holds up as a production as well as this does. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why Voyager doesn't, despite coming after this, because it went back to the more standalone episode idea, although there was a little bit of continuity, I understand, with 7 of 9, that went back more to the standalone episodic structure. And this holds up in today's television landscape better than those two shows do.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I find slightly frustrating. And I made a point that, you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, and that's fine. But I do find it a little frustrating that this show isn't more revered than it is, just because I think people aren't giving it a real chance.
I think this is also one of the first times that we see Sisko being a little bit more thoughtful in what he's doing, and they're really starting to differentiate him from other captains in the series. His, as Paul pointed out, how he deals with Jake rings very true to a parent when you realise that at some point you have to let your children go and they have to make their own decisions, and you just have to trust them. And if they make a cock up of it, then you're there for them. But you have to let them do that.
Well, and that's the great thing about this show, is that no other captain was essentially, you know, had a son or a daughter or an offspring to deal with. Everyone else...
Kirk did, and the Klingon bastards killed him.
Well, granted, but, you know...
but he didn't raise him.
He didn't raise him. You know, he basically pawned him off on Carol Marcus, and, you know...
He left him with his baby mama, his space baby mama, and said, see ya.
So, you know, the fact that we do get this, and we do get, you know, some fatherly interaction, we get to see Sisko not only have to deal with these, you know, intergalactic, you know, Starfleet, you know, space problems, he also has to deal with realistic problems with family and, you know, his son getting into, you know, finding out about girls or hanging out with the wrong crowd, or, you know, what his goal in life to be, what his occupation should be. So it's interesting. It makes Sisko, in my opinion, a much deeper character than just the stereotypical Starfleet captain who has to deal with, you know, space problems.
Well, maybe it was late last night when I was watching, but I was touched by the moment when Sisko comes up to Jake and he hugs him on the promenade and he kisses him on the head. You know, he's like, thanks for being such a good son. And I was feeling a bit sentimental. I was like, wow, you know, it was touching. And it was just a well-played scene for me.
Mm-hmm. And what was also great about that was Jake was like, Dad, not in front of the...
Yeah, exactly. Like,
it was great. And, you know, we've kind of complained a little bit about Cyric Lofton, you know, not really having quite the acting chops. But I think he did a great job in this role, you know, playing the sort of aloof, not really uninterested, but, you know, he just playing a typical teenage kid. So
especially,
I thought...
Especially when the Vulcan girl walked by and both... Mm. He and Nog were like, hey.
Yeah, I like that scene. I just have this thought in my mind about, like, just thinking about Kirk with his son. It'd be kind of funny to do, like, a Saturday Night Live skit where you have William Shatner on and he, like, visits, like, one of those pleasure planets. And, you know, say have something where he had been there for 6 months or something like that. And you have mm-hmm. a bunch of CGI'd Chris Pines walking by. Like every couple of seconds, you have another Chris Pine walk by. That he's got children all over the place on that planet. just a thought.
Now, well, you're in touch with Lorne Michaels. Get that done, Paul.
We're both from New York. Of course I know him.
Yeah.
Okay, well, do we have anything else we wanna talk about this episode, or are we ready to give our...
I had a quick Armin Shimerman story.
Go right ahead.
I went to a Star Trek convention, it was just as Star Trek Generations was being released, and one of the highlights was Marina Sirtis's dress and the fact that it was too short at the bottom and too short at the top, and she kept having to pull it down and pull it up, pull it down and pull it up. And it was basically Flashbulb City when she stepped up on the stage. But other than that, there was a point where Armin Shimerman was there and he was signing autographs, you know, for everyone, but he was signing them for free. And there was some of the people at the convention were ticked off. And other people were like, oh, he's going to be here all day. But he was so enthused and so happy to meet the fans because he wasn't charging for his autograph either. So his line was massive because for the other one you had to sign, it was like $10 for each one. But he was so happy and, you know, to meet all the fans that he had no problem. He was going to stay there as long as he had to and get sign everybody's stuff. And he just really seemed to enjoy playing Quark. So.
Mm. Yeah, I remember a convention that we had a long time ago. This was probably even before Star Trek V came out. And James Doohan had come to that one, and he was doing the same thing. He was basically... This was probably before, you know, they realized that we could get paid a lot more money if we charged for a signature. And I got his signature on one of his, you know... with his little photos, so it was he was a great guy as well.
You know, I'm thinking, I could be wrong about this, but I'm thinking Armin Shimerman was probably in his mid to late 40s when this show went on, and I'm thinking he probably like appreciated the fame it got him more than somebody who would have had it very young in life. You know what I mean? I think he could put it in perspective and really appreciate how, you know, he finally became a name known character, you know, actor at that point in his life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so he was also he also had the advantage of being in Buffy at the same time.
That he was he in at? Yeah, I guess that wasn't the same time, was it? He was the was that first? No, that was second season. He was the principal.
Yeah, he came in as the principal at the end of the first season after the first principal was eaten by hyenas, and he was principal of the school throughout seasons 2 and 3. So he was doing both gigs simultaneously.
That's right.
Eaten by. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. I haven't watched.
Well, no. Not just hyenas. Weren't they hyena students?
Yeah. They were people that had been possessed by the spirit of the hyena god. Do you not watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
I watched the movie.
Oh, dear me.
I watched the pilot.
Andy, should we start a Buffy the Vampire Slayer show?
We should talk. I've pitched that when we get to the end of this in 6.5 years, we are definitely doing Firefly.
All right.
Oh, okay.
That's true. I can handle that.
Well, that wouldn't be many episodes either.
13 episodes, just do that stand on your head, and a movie. That'd be done.
Fine, yeah, we could follow this up. Yeah, 7 years from now, we'll be finished up. Okay, so ratings. Do we want to give this ratings out of 5 bars of cold pressed latinum? Andy, Paul, go ahead and go first.
All right, I'm gonna set the bar really high on this because I thought this was an almost perfect episode, and there's so little to criticize in this thing, and it does world building, it does character building, just almost perfect. I'm going with 4.5 stars on this thing, or 4.5 bars. This is the highest rated one I'm given so far this season.
Excellent.
I have problems cutting bars of latinum into half. I think it devalues them. So people will go back and listen to where I've given halves and call me out on that, I'm sure.
I'm looking. You have multiple halves here. You got 1, 2, 3, 4 episodes you've given half stars on. So
yeah, shut up. Right, I'm going to go 4. And it's not that I disagree with you. I don't. But I know what my 5-star episode is this season, and I'm saving it for that one.
I didn't give the 5 stars.
you are right. This was very, very good.
Yes, this was exceptional. I agree. I'm gonna have to go with Paul and give it a 4.5 as well. I thought there was excellent world building, there was excellent character building, there was a nice scene between Jake and Ben.
I thought you were going to say between Jake and the fat man.
Well, there could be that'd be an interesting crossover, but you know it was just and we didn't have too much Bashir, so that was also a bonus.
Yeah, but on the negative side, we didn't have a lot of Kira either, no, so that's why it lost a bar of latinum for that.
So and not a lot of Dax either.
Yeah, well, she was in there talking with Ben, you know, eating the whatever
she was macking on his gumbo or whatever he made.
Yeah, well, you know. Wouldn't you? But yeah, 4.5 bars of Gold Press Latinum. I mean, this isn't a perfect episode, but it's pretty darn close. And Wallace Shawn, I don't think you can, you know, I don't think you could have done better than casting him as the role of this, you know, overly avaristic, you know, lecherous Ferengi with white ear hair. It's awesome. Wonderful.
And you know what? It's an episode that every time I think of it, an image pops into my mind, and I have to like stifle a laugh, just picturing Morn at the door trying to come into the bar. It just makes me, it makes me chuckle every time thinking about it.
Because it was the first one they'd done where they proved they could do comedy properly, not just a scene here or a scene there, that they could do a funny episode and it hold up all the way through. Next Generation struggled with comedy.
Well, it's because Captain Picard. You know, I hate to like bash on Next Generation because I love Next Generation too, but Captain Picard was too much of a stiff to really make for over the top comedy. You had to go, you know, subtle dry humor if you wanted to try and involve him in it.
Captain Picard Day was funny.
So Bill, you know, even though we're not going to include you in our ranking, would you like to give this one?
You're not important enough. Well, despite getting up at this godly hour of the morning to join us, and we don't consider what you have to say important.
I'm not going to. No, I've already made up this spreadsheet. I'm not adding. You know, I'm not adding him in.
You're not adding guest ratings.
I'm adding him online. Don't worry about it, Bill. No, you count. Even if I don't let you count him back to the bins.
No, yes, I know. Yes, Mr. Star. Yes, Mr. Oh, wait, that's the intern.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you guys wanted me to give a rating, if I would screw up the spreadsheet, but I would say I'll give this one. I'll give it a 4.5. It was, like you guys said, we had the world building, we had the touching scenes, you know, the whole that what Jake is really doing, he's actually teaching his friend to read, and you know that kind of explains, when you see that at the end, that explains everything that's been going on in the episode, because you think, you know, they're just two kids running around goofing off, getting into trouble, but actually that's not what they're doing. You know, they're hiding away in the cargo bays where no one can see them, and you know, Jake is teaching Nog how to read. Which, you know, that kind of explains, like we said earlier, you know, that explains why he didn't turn in his homework, because he probably, you know, he couldn't do it. So, I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that aspect of it, that he didn't do the homework because he couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he didn't do it just because he didn't feel like he wanted to be bothered. I thought he was a typical teenager that, you know, just thought he could get away with not doing it. Well, but that's a good point. I didn't even realize that. I know Jake was teaching him how to read, but I still thought whatever homework he had, he would have been able to do. But you know, I guess that was just, it was too subtle for me.
Oh, subtlety, that's not your forte, is it? Oh.
I need to be hit over the head with a hammer.
One of the other things that I looked up real quick, because I was curious as to who was playing the different Ferengi, and the only other one that I recognized was the Ferengi that threatens Quark right after he becomes Negus. That is the actor that plays Grumpy on Once Upon a Time. I don't know if you guys watch Once Upon a Time.
No, because I have male genitals, so I can't. Sorry.
You bastard.
Testosterone prevents me.
Sorry, Hope. Sorry, Hope. I don't
The
watch.
Power of testosterone compels you.
So what, you want to make it for a female audience, Bill?
Yes, that's what I've done. The guy that plays the helper, the bodyguard of the Grand Nagus, do you know who he is?
Tiny Ron.
Yes, and he played in?
I don't know. He played in Deep Space Nine.
No. He was the guy.
He wasn't in Adam's Family, was he?
No.
Go ahead.
The Rocketeer.
Oh, he was the one. He was the one that was like the Rondo Hatton analog.
Yep. Yes.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I completely forgot about that. That's awesome.
So, yep, that's all I got.
Well, just looking at his IMDb page quickly, he was also in Ace Ventura: Pet Detective. He was in The Naked Gun. He was in Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze. Rocketeer, as Bill mentioned. He was in the TV show Coach.
Was he in Ace Ventura? Oh, was he one of the thugs at the end? Or when the...
Don't bring Jim Carrey movies into our show. We're trying to have a classy show here.
I was going to say, the only way I could get through Ace Ventura was just by watching Courtney Cox.
Mm-hmm. Not to me, my jungle friends.
Okay. Oh, is that what you say to Courtney Cox?
Well...
That's what I say to my dog and my cat.
Okay. All right. Well, we've got a couple of emails. We've only got two so far. So, do you want to save one for the next episode?
Incoming transmission.
Yeah, we'll do one each.
Okay. So, who wants to do the one from Gene?
I'll take it.
I'll do. Oh, I may not be around. All right. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. You do it.
Anyway. I would like to push Gene's new name that I've been trying to stick him with. Gene, the podcasting machine. For all his podcasting listening and recording that he does, and that is the take on from the Gong Show from
yes
Gene the dancing machine. So Gene Hendrix the podcasting machine,
based on the pictures that we've seen lately on Facebook, I'm going to say Gene the weight loss machine.
Oh yeah. Yes, congratulations. I wonder
if all the Two True Freaks podcasting has helped him with that, the vomiting. Perhaps
that's from listening to the show. It's not recording.
I just can't eat after listening to this.
I was going to say, as he realizes the impending deadline for releasing a show is coming upon him.
I could buy that as well.
Yeah, Gene Hendricks has emailed us. Hello, Gene. Sean, Andy, and Paul. Oh, I'm Bill. He didn't have the foresight to add that, but I didn't want Bill to feel left out.
That's okay.
I remember watching the Q episode when it came out and loving it, but having rewatched it recently, I do still like it, but it does try to make DS9 into TNG, and that just doesn't work. It works as a way to further define Sisko, if just a bit, as being a man of action. I'm sure when he eventually tells Worf about punching Q in the face, that's the main reason Worf is loyal to Sisko. I'm not sure where the adoration of Vash comes from either. Even when she was first on TNG, I didn't like her. I don't know if it was the anything for me attitude or the way all the other characters reacted to her, but her character just didn't sit well with me. I was always waiting for someone to slap her for putting them in danger. At least we never had to deal with her again. Also, someone needs to start a Kickstarter for Everybody Loves Garak. That show needs to be made right now. Gee.
Gene's email just reminds me of how much I was. You know, I do not in any way promote violence towards women, but how much I just wanted to punch Vash in the face.
Well, you know, it's not hating the person, it's hating the character. So I think that's perfectly acceptable.
No, I hate the person.
Oh, okay.
Poor Jennifer Hetrick. What has she ever done to you?
She played Vash.
That assaulted your senses so much. Oh, anything else on her IMDb page, just you cannot enjoy it.
Just to bring back that horrible episode when we were doing such a good one now.
I can't think of the emails.
I can't think of anything else. I just listened to that episode you guys did. I can't think of anything else she was actually ever in.
She was in L.A. Law. She was Arnie Becker's wife.
No, I didn't watch that when it was out years ago. So, no, she just didn't do it for me, even as Vash. She was just, eh.
Sorry, Paul, we had to bring down the episode by going back to QLS. We apologize.
I'm going to have to blame Gene. If I go to Atlantic City for that con, I'm going to try and tempt him with food.
You should make him an offer he can't refuse. Oh, boom. That didn't work at all. Andy, why don't you give us what we're coming up with next time on the show?
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, has Odo finally found his people?
I guess that's the whole intro.
Yep, there you go.
That's it.
Or has he found a former rock star from the 60s?
No, you're thinking Dennis.
No, he actually was the guy that... Never mind, I guess we'll talk about that next time.
Okay.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Everybody, and welcome back to Listen to the Prophets, your bi-weekly show where two remarkable podcasters and myself jump into the information superhighway and talk about the redheaded stepchild of the Star Trek universe, Deep Space Nine. And this time out on the show, we're breaking into the double digits as this is our 10th episode. Woohoo! Yay. Who would have thought
Already
we would have made it
champagne.
This? Now we only have 166 more to cover. Hooray! I can tell everyone's enthused. So yeah. Now that we're,
you know, there's a little bit of a I don't know, mixed feeling about that, because on the one hand it's like, yeah, we want to get into this, and the other hand we're doing it because we're supposed to be enjoying it.
Yeah,
but it's not supposed to be. Oh my God, when is this going to be over?
Yeah, well, it's. I calculated it out. If we do this at biweekly for the next 6.5 years, we'll be finished. So by the time we're your age, Paul, we'll. We will technically be finished with this.
But by that time, I won't be my age anymore.
Well,
I'll be putting out ads for diabetes.
You can just cut out. Stop celebrating birthdays. It'll be fine.
Yeah, you've seen the problem, haven't you? Paul will not stop aging as we age.
Yeah,
sadly.
Can't catch up to me, unfortunately.
Oh, hold on. You know what? I'm not recording. Hold on.
I believe I am.
Okay.
Let me make sure.
All right, now I'm recording.
It says I am, so hopefully that is the case.
Yes, okay, now I'm recording. Well, let me start that over again, and we'll be spontaneous again.
Well, were you recording before?
No, I'm not, but I am now. It's saying that I'm recording.
All right, mine says I am, so when we're done, I'm going to... I'll load this up to the Dropbox and send it to you, so this way you'll have a choice to pick from either beginning, whichever ends up coming out better.
Okay, well, we'll try it again. Lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, because like I said, his actions.
Somebody playing with Latin
reflect...
there.
No, that was my Frankie wife that came in or something.
Bye, honey. You're gonna get slapped.
I do have her clothed.
Oh well, that's always nice, I guess.
I have to take her out.
Or maybe not.
Yeah, she's obviously not in the room now.
Yeah, otherwise we'd be hearing the slap.
Blap! Where were we? Oh, yes. Croto. Oh.
Croton.
I love crotons on my salad. They really enhance the flavor of it.
I wanted to throw in a thank you, but was it Mark Kalmbach that said what the show needs is more Dr. Bill?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can I just throw that in here real quick?
Having recorded two episodes with you, I'm not sure he was right. Did I say that out loud?
I'll put this in outtakes. Why not?
You going to put it in the outtakes for the first episode we did? Or
I can. I can put it in.
Yeah, just so
want.
That he, you know, because I like Mark. He's a pretty cool guy and everything. So thanks, Mark. Thanks for badgering these guys and getting me on Listen to the Prophets. And I still have to work on that Listen to the Prophets song. To okay. The tune of Roxette's Listen to Your Heart. Listen to the Prophets, because they're watching for you.
Okay, you know Roxette, but I get shit because I know Tiffany and Debbie Gibson. You can go to hell.
Oh, I don't have any testicles because I watch Once Upon a Time.
Because I don't care about either of them, to be honest with you. I got to put Tiffany just a step below Roxette, yes. Although I would not put Roxette very high.
There you go.